I'm looking forward to tonight. Pastor Shane preached a cracker message this morning. Tonight, I know what he's going to preach about. It's going to be awesome. Get ready. Put your seatbelts on. Come on, let's give him a great applause as he comes to preach the word.
All right. Thank you so much. You can be seated. Again, it's always awesome to be with my Emerge family. We worked it out after this. 15 years I've been coming by. And so I love having long friendships that just, they're just there. And they bring faith out of you. And so I've got a word for tonight that if you do me a favor and cancel the white noise of your week for about 35, 40 minutes or so, and see what God might do tonight. Here's what's going to happen. You're going to leave, if you get what I think you're going to get tonight, you're going to leave freer on the inside than you were when you walked in. Something will expand inside that it will increase your capacity. And so I can't wait to share this. Anytime I open the scripture, I want Jesus to get bigger, the cross to work better, the resurrection to be central, scriptures to get bigger, not smaller. Hope that's going to be your experience here tonight. After this is over, we will have our resource table set up. There's no hard copy anything anymore. We just do preloaded download cards. And so if you get one, you can go to the library that we have and get one, or two, three, whatever. All of that profit helps us fund our main mission in the world, which is to take care of the poor and the afflicted. We have 3 children's homes in China to look after children with disabilities, 2 in Hanyang, 1 in Changsha. And so what I'm asking you to do is consider after this over, let me put something in your hands that'll end up putting something on your device that will change the way you look at God. You put something in our hands that helps us feed, clothe, shelter, educate children with disabilities. I think it's a pretty good trade. We give them a monthly amount, but then 3 or 4 times a year we get to pay for surgeries that save lives. And so the only thing I would ask is that if you don't want anything, God bless you. I'll see you next year when I come by. We've got this sorted out. Is this public? Or when I'm coming next year? Okay. So we're going to do something really special at Easter next year. And I can't wait to spend Easter weekend with you. It's the Holy Week. If you don't want anything, God bless you. I'll see you when I come by at Easter. If you do want something, if you would come by in the first 10 or 15 minutes or so, that would be amazing. The reason is so that my team can eat. That would be really good, right? The fulfillment of Scripture is to do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And so, you know, this church has an awesome chatting afterwards culture. And I think it's amazing. It's better that you like each other. But if you don't want anything, chat away. But if you want something, if you would buy first and chat second, that would be awesome. All right. So I want to talk to you tonight about how to handle regret. The quality of your life will oftentimes come down to how you handle regret, failure. The things that, you know, as soon as I say that, everybody should kind of perk up, you know? Like if I was talking about some, I want to talk to you about this or this, it might interest some and not others. But when I say regret, failure, that applies, now we're talking everybody's language. Because everybody's got that thing in their life that they hope to God never ends up on the internet, right? Everybody has that thing that if you had a do-over, you would take it, but you don't have a do-over, and then people treat you as if you do have a do-over. It's those things in your life that when you meet a new group of people, you wonder how much of your story to tell because they might think less of you, but then if they found out later, they might think you're a liar, but you're not a liar. It's just none of their business. Like in most things, when it comes to regret, failure, there's 2 ditches to avoid. 1 ditch is to be belligerent, to blame, to dig in, to not take responsibility for what you did. That's going to lead you to nowhere. The other ditch is to be so contrite that you're still bringing things up 10 years later and apologizing, right? And so there's a wisdom in the middle. How do you handle it? This is an age-old question. Thank God we didn't live in ancient Sumerian culture. In ancient Sumerian culture where Abraham came from, if you had offended the gods, the people believed that the gods would withhold rain. And so they said the way to handle failure with the gods is to cut yourself. And of course, the question, if I say you could get right with God by cutting yourself, what would your question be? What must I cut? And more importantly, how much of what must I cut? And no one knew the answer. So they said, hey, just cut till it rains. That's your sign that you've done enough cutting. Well, they lived in Iraq. right? Their arms will be falling off. It's a desert, right? We've evolved better than that now, but there's still some of that. In the 1500s, there was a monk that wrote this, quote, "I prayed on my knees on stone floors until they bled," which leads to this question: what kind of God would take pleasure in you doing pain to yourself just so he could be who he says he was to begin with? Like if we can't learn anything, our lack of faithfulness never, ever compromises God's faithfulness, right? If the cross teaches us nothing, it's that. This is true strength. No matter how you treat me, it will not motivate me to act outside of who I am. That's one of the messages of the cross. That morality is not a function of behaviors we impose upon others. It's a function of how we love others. And so the oldest answer in the Bible on how to handle regret still might be the best starting point. And here's what they did, right? This is brilliant. They set aside one day a year. That day was called Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. They set aside one day a year, and it was the holiest day of the year. And on this day, it was the day God forgave all sins for the entire year. If I could illustrate this, right? Let's say if I could use a bucket as an illustration. And everybody put your regrets for the whole year in this bucket. On this day, you would bring your whole bucket, and you would get that bucket emptied. So that next year, you have a fresh bucket. The idea is you can't carry this year's regrets into next year, or next year you have two buckets. And then the next year you have three buckets, and then you have to consolidate it into a crane. And if you don't have a regular ritual to let it go for yourself and let it go for them, your life frankly just gets too heavy to carry around. And this day was the holiest day of the year. And here was the thing: it's the only time in the whole Bible that you have this command, Shabbat Shabbaton, absolutely no work. In other words, no one is allowed to do anything for 24 hours while the sins are being forgiven. Here's the reason that's so beautiful. Because if you allow people to do anything, it's just in human nature to say, it's because of what I did that God acted in kindness. And then our faithfulness is in control of God's faithfulness. And that would be ugly. Not only that, you would create a situation where some people are in and some people are out and some people are good. This day just did away with all of that and said, no. It's because of the grace of God alone. Everybody gets a fresh start. Everybody gets a second chance. Everybody gets an opportunity to have a do-over. Everybody gets a clean slate. Everybody gets to write a fresh story. And it was actually, by the way, that day was yesterday. Yom Kippur was yesterday. And so that's why I wanted to talk about this tonight, because it's in that season. And what it was an agricultural reality that was quite literal. That this was the season where all the harvesting had been done in June, May, June, and this was the season where the ground had been plowed to put fresh seeds in the ground. And the idea is that what you're seeing happen on the ground, where you get an opportunity to sow new seeds. Every year, you get an opportunity to put different seeds in the ground, and the seeds you sow are the fruits you grow. And the idea is that don't show up every year with the same bucket of regrets. Is God faithful to forgive you? Yes, every time, but your life will stink to high heaven. You get to sow new seeds. If you've been sowing seeds of anger and reaping a harvest of bitterness, this is the time where you can say, no, my next year will not be a repeat of last year. I can sow new seeds. If your actions have caused harm to others, there's a way that you can wallow in that regret and despair, or you could draw a line in the ground and say, just as it is with this ground, I can sow new seeds so I can reap a different harvest. But this day was, you know what, if you show up every year with the same bucket, I'm so sad for your life, but God is faithful and just to forgive us every single time. Now, a later writer said his mercy is actually new every morning. And then Jesus said, if you want to know what I'm actually like, I forgive 70 times 7 for the same sin in the same day. So if you can't go with Jesus because that's just too nice, at least go back to forgiving yourself and others once a week. If you can't do that, at least go back to forgiving yourself and others once a month. If you can't do that, at least go back to forgiving yourself and others once a year. And if your concept of God is meaner than Leviticus, it's time to change. It's just time to change. If you're still bringing up someone's failure that's 10 years old, the problem is you. I've got four goals tonight. I want us to leave tonight equipped on how to handle our own regret. But maybe equally important, I want us equipped on how to handle their regret. Because what we find in the Jesus teaching is that how you handle someone else's failure will reciprocate itself on how you can handle your own. So it's really, that's really important. I want Jesus to get more beautiful for you. So I'm going to show you how the gospel writers use Yom Kippur as a framework to explain what Jesus meant. And fourth, I want us to understand the power of celebration. So let's look at this. This is Leviticus 16. This is the Old Testament account of Yom Kippur. This is what it says. Aaron is to offer the bull for his own sin offering to make atonement for himself and his household. He is then to take the two goats and present them before the Lord at the entrance to the tent of meeting. He is to cast lots for the two goats, one lot for the Lord and the other for the scapegoat. So this day centered around two goats. Essentially, this is a caricature. You would take two goats. You would cast lots. One goat was the goat for the Lord, and it's going to be a bad day for that goat, okay? But let's just be honest. If you're born a goat, it's a bad day, period, right? You're going to be born a goat, right? The other goat was for the scapegoat. Let me see if I can put this on a linear slide. Next slide. So there's two goats. One was the goat for the Lord, and the other was the goat for the scapegoat. Now there's a weird word in English, scapegoat. It's a very weird word in Hebrew. The word is azazel. Azazel means, it's a verb. It means take him away, or it could be used in a noun form, a weapon in the hand of the enemy. In other words, whatever the enemy's using to beat you up, normally your own failure, your own regret, we're going to remove it. We're going to take that out of his hand. We're going to remove that weapon from him. So Azazel was this, it actually was such a powerful metaphor that it made it into modern mythology. If you're an X-Men fan, one of the X-Men is a guy named Azazel, spelled the same way. And Azazel's power is, if he can get a hold of you, he can remove you. He can take you away in a flash, just like that. So I'm going to take a risk here. It's not a big risk because I've been coming so long. I want us to have, it's such an important word. It's going to come back later. I want us to learn this word. The word is Azazel. So let's try that with some go Brisbane Broncos this weekend. Gusto. Okay, let's try that. On three. Ready? Three, two, one, go. Azazel. That's a perfect amount of energy. Perfect. And that means take him away. So this day centered around two goats. One goat for the Lord and everybody. What was that guy's name again? Azazel. And Azazel means take him away. Aaron shall bring the goat whose lot falls to the Lord and sacrifice it. Next slide. And sacrifice it for a sin offering. But the goat chosen by lot as the Azazel shall be presented alive before the Lord to be used for making atonement by sending it away into the desert as the Azazel. This is the day that God just lets it all go. Everybody gets a clean slate. Everybody gets a fresh start. Everybody gets a second chance. Everybody gets an opportunity to write a better story. And literally this day was yesterday. So I want to walk you through a basic Yom Kippur ceremony. And I want to show you how particularly the gospel writer Matthew, writing to Jews, was using Yom Kippur as a way to frame the meaning of Jesus to the world. So first, the goat for the Lord. Next slide. What they would do is they take the goat inside and they would tie the goat to an altar. And then the priest would lay hands on the goat. The word in Hebrew is malah. Malah means to take something that's within my power to impart and impart it onto something else. In this context, the priest had the power to put all the regrets, the failures, the sins of everybody on this goat. So if everybody has your bucket of regret, everybody got your bucket of regret, we're going to take it, we're going to put it on the goat. And so the priest would impart the sins onto the goat. The Talmud says that as a part of this thing, the pressure was so big on putting the failures and the sins of Israel onto this goat that the priest had to turn his head. So the picture is this. Hold on a second. Matthew says that when God put the sins of the whole world onto Jesus, he had to turn his head. Is this the day God just lets it all go? Is this happening right in front of us? The next part of the ceremony was called the press. The priest would lay on the goat and squeeze. And I think the idea was, we really, really, really got to get the sins in the goat. But here's the play on words. The word press in Hebrew is Gethsemane. So hold on. So Matthew says, Jesus went to the Garden of Gethsemane. And remember his prayer? He said, Father, I'm pressed with the sins of the whole world. Is this the day God just lets it all go? Is Jesus the living embodiment of what Yom Kippur was all about? The next part of the ceremony was called It Is Finished. At exactly the ninth hour, the priest would proclaim in a loud voice, It is finished. He would then cut the goat's throat. Hold on. The gospel writer Matthew says, at exactly the ninth hour, Jesus proclaimed in a loud voice, It is finished. This is Yom Kippur language. It's like, wait a minute. Is this the day God just lets it all go? Is this the day everybody gets a clean slate, a fresh start, a second chance, and an opportunity to write a better story? Is this the day that happens? The next part of the ceremony was called Don't Touch Me. What he would do is he would cut the goat's throat, and he would catch the goat's blood in this cone-shaped cylinder, broad at the top, narrow at the bottom. And he would swirl it because the blood had to stay alive for it to be viable. And he would swirl it to keep it moving long enough for him to walk from the altar to the Holy of Holies. And he would say, Don't touch me, don't touch me. I have not yet offered the blood of the sacrifice. Don't touch me, don't touch me. I've not yet offered the blood of the sacrifice. Hold on a second. The gospel writers say after all these things, Jesus met two women in a garden, and he doesn't even say hello. What does he say? Don't touch me, don't touch me. This is Yom Kippur language. He would walk into the Holy of Holies and sprinkle blood on the altar seven times. Different message for a different day. He would sprinkle blood on the altar seven times, and he would be a bloody mess. He would then come out of the Holy of Holies, and here's what they believed. They believed if he survived it, then that meant God accepted it. If he didn't survive it, they had to do it again, okay? So imagine the pressure on this guy walking in there. They're tying ropes around him so they could drag him out. So he comes out, and he's a bloody mess. But this is a culture that believed in ghosts. So what we had to do is he had to wash his hands and then present his hands to be touched like it's me. I'm flesh and blood. I made it. I'm not like an apparition. I made it. Hold on a second. The gospel writers say, after all these things, Jesus appeared to his disciples in an upper room. And what's the first thing he does? He presents his hands to be touched. They're a little freaked out, as you would be. They're a little freaked out, and they're like, no, they thought they saw a ghost, right? And he goes, no, it's me. You could come touch me. They're like, we ain't touching you, bro. He says, fine. Then give me something to eat. I'll prove it's not just falling through. Like Jesus is doing bar tricks to show that he's actually flesh and blood. But this is all Yom Kippur language. This is the gospel writer Matthew showing to a Jewish audience, if you want to know what Jesus means to the world, picture Jesus, one of the messages, not the only message, but one of the messages of Jesus is the living embodiment of the grace and faithfulness of God despite our lack of faithfulness. Our lack of faith never compromises God's faithfulness. And this is the day that everybody gets a clean slate, everybody gets a fresh start, everybody gets a do-over, everybody gets an opportunity to write a better story because your ground has been plowed and you can now choose to sow new seeds. But this day doesn't center around just one goat. There was a second goat. The first goat was the goat for the Lord. The second goat was everybody together. What was his name with some gusto? Azazel. And Azazel means take him away. Here's how it goes. Next slide. When Aaron has finished making atonement for the most holy place, the tent of meeting and the altar, he shall then bring forward the live goat. That's the Azazel. He is to lay both hands on the head of the live goat and confess over it all the wickedness and rebellion of the Israelites. All their sins. So everybody's got your bucket. We're going to confess over. We're going to put it on this goat, right? Everybody's got all your regrets. Now, I took the time to go look that up in the original language. And the word all there is actually all. Because when all says all, let's leave all, because if we ever make exception to all, we run the risk of our failure not counting in the category of all. So when all says all, let's leave it all, because all's better if it's all. And let's stop making exceptions to the word all, because when we make exceptions to the word all, it's dangerous because we can look down on people as if they're marked for life. And not only that, one day we will do something that when we make exceptions for all with them, we might run the risk that our thing is also the exception to all. So here's my question. If you're here tonight and you're wondering if your failure fits into the metron and the scope of this kind of grace, here's my only question, is whatever you did, does it fit into the category of all? But Shane, they're an addict. I know. Love them. Help them. All. There's so much pain in that lifestyle. And if you're here and you're struggling with addiction, I want you to stop. I want you to be free from that. This isn't about just do whatever you want to do. But the way forward is not to live in despair. The way forward is to realize that you can sow new seeds. All means all. But Shane, they left their wife for another woman. I know, and there's a lot of pain in that. And trust me, there's going to be a lot of consequences for that. And I don't want anybody facing that. But you can't, to change your life, you can't be living in that despair 7 years down the road. All means all. And so let's stop making exceptions to all, because what it does is eventually it'll put us in despair. And we don't want to live in despair. We want to live in resurrection, hope, surprise, awe, wonder, astonishment, amazement, and be able to go forward empowered to change our life. All their sins. And put them on the goat's head. I'll talk about that in a second. He shall then send the goat away. There's that take him away. Into the desert in the care of the man appointed to the task. The goat will carry on itself all their sins, all their sins, to a solitary place, and the man shall release it into the desert. The man who releases the goat as the Azazel must wash his clothes and bathe himself with water. Afterwards, he may come into the camp. So this day, centered around two goats. The first goat was for the Lord. The second goat was, what was his name? Everybody together. Azazel. Azazel means take him away. So here's what they would do. They had this live goat. He's terrified. He knows what just happened to his friend in there, right? He's in front of thousands and thousands of people. And the priest would mala. We're going to take everybody's bucket of regret, and we're going to put him on this goat's head. Why would they do that? Here's what happened, right? On this day, you had a goat that handled everything in private. But in general, people won't believe things without seeing it. So the goat in public was meant to show you what the goat in private had already handled. By the way, that's how the New Testament frames Jesus. That Jesus didn't just die at Calvary. He was crucified before the foundation of the world. In other words, he didn't inaugurate a new reality. He simply showed you what God was always like from the beginning. 1 Peter 1:20, he was crucified before the foundation of the world, but in these last days was made manifest so you could see it. Ephesians 1, he was crucified before the foundation of the world. Hebrews chapter 4, his sacrificial work was completed before the foundation of the world. 2 Timothy 2, your salvation was given to you in Jesus Christ before the foundation of the world. Revelation 13, 8, your name was found written in the book of the Lamb, slain before the foundation of the world. 1 John chapter 1, we know that all these things have been true from the beginning, but now we have seen him with our own two eyes. And my personal favorite, Hebrews chapter 9. Didn't you know all along it was impossible for the blood of sacrifices to take away your sin? But God let you do it because your conscience needed it and your conscience needed to be appeased. For don't you know that Jesus died before the foundation of the world at the culmination of the ages? In other words, to the New Testament writers, Jesus was not inaugurating a new reality about God. He was simply showing you what God was always like from the beginning, that he handled everything before it all started, but people wouldn't believe it without seeing it. So by grace and kindness and humility, he humbled himself and showed us. The goat for Azazel. First thing, mala, lay hands on the goat. We're going to put everybody's sins onto this goat. So everybody got your bucket of regret? We're going to put it on the goat, and they would mala, lay hands on the goat. Second thing they would do is they would attach it to its head. They would take a scarlet woolen thread, a red cord, and they would wrap it around the goat's head. When they wrapped it around the goat's head, the priest would back off and say, "Behold, Israel, your sin. Behold, Israel, your sin." Hold on a second. Matthew says that as a part of Jesus' trial, Pilate stood Jesus in front of a Jewish crowd and wrapped his head with thorns. Hold on a second. If you wrap someone's head with thorns, what color would the wrapping be? Red. This is Yom Kippur language. Is this the day God just lets it all go? The next part was they would walk him through the crowd. So they would take the goat and they would walk it through the crowd. And the priest would say in a loud voice, "Behold, Israel, your sin is being removed from you as far as the east is from the west. Behold, Israel, your sin is being removed from you as far as the east is from the west. This would take a while. So they would go. And remember in Leviticus, it says that the Azazel must be put into the care of a man appointed to the task. Remember Jesus said to Pilate, you've been given charge over me by heaven. This is all Yom Kippur language. They would give this man appointed to task. You had to go release the goat. Now the priest would cut a piece of the red cord off and hang it from the temple door. And then the guy would go about releasing the goat into the desert. And this is where Yom Kippur gets boring and awkward, because no one was allowed to do anything. You can't sing, you can't dance, talking is debatable, but you can't kneel. Because the idea would be, if somebody starts doing that and everybody's sins gets forgiven, at some point someone's gonna claim that it's their ritual that does it. And you can't have that. So no one's allowed to do anything, but it takes a long time to remove this goat. So you're just kind of like, and then there'd be, it's whistling work, you know? It's just awkward. So what they started doing is they started throwing the goat off the nearest cliff. The reason is it was more expedient, it was efficient, and the Mishnah says that one Yom Kippur, 3 days after Yom Kippur, the goat found its way back home. And so everybody's sins returned. It was this loaded goat. By the way, that made its way into English metaphors. When you were young, if you did something stupid and your friends were all taking the Mickey out of you, right? What would your grandmother tell you? Hey, don't let them get your goat. That's a metaphor for bringing up someone's failure, regret, pain. Pause. We are the Church of Jesus Christ. And the Church of Jesus Christ should always be goat removers and never goat bringers. When we bring up someone's failure, especially if it's over a year old, we're becoming the weapon in the hand of the enemy that God removed. And we don't want to be that. I am sick of these YouTube heresy hunter people that make a living pointing out other people's flaws, sometimes from years ago. And here's what's disappointing. They're doing it for the money, but there wouldn't be any money in it if we weren't clicking on it. Tom Wright, the best New Testament theologian on earth, can do the most brilliant exegesis of Romans chapter 4 ever done, and he'll get 1,100 views, but some dipstick with a microphone can sit there and point out someone's failure in the most embarrassing way, and he gets 700,000 views? That makes no sense, and that is an indictment on us. We should be spending all of our energy making our world a better place, not bringing people's goats up. We don't want to be goat bringers. We want to be goat removers. If nothing else, just be quiet. But otherwise, we should be using our energy to exhaust every way, to restore and requalify and do what we could do to make sure people know their goat is removed. So the next time someone brings up an old regret of yours, just go, yeah, you're right. I just don't see my goat anywhere. This was that. Listen, I'm on safe ground here because they're my friends, okay? So I'm going to speak for Emerge Church for a second. At Emerge Church, if you're looking for a place to get a fresh start, a clean slate, a second chance, and an opportunity to write a better story, this is your place. Your place is safe here because at Emerge Church, we don't put up with goat bringers. We celebrate goat removers. You will be reminded here that your goat is no longer a part of your story, that you are not defined by that thing that happened in your past. However, we would want to empower you to sow new seeds so that you can live a better life. So they would throw the goat off the cliff. It's awkward, you know? No one's allowed to do anything except the high priest, and he's doing boring stuff like shoveling the ashes of the red heifer. which leads to all kinds of questions like, what? But there's this red cord hanging from the door that he cut off that goat's head. And the Talmud says that every year on this day, a miracle would happen, and that cord would turn white. It's mentioned in the Bible. Come now, let us reason together. Though your sins are like scarlet, they'll be made white as snow. This is Yom Kippur language. Can you imagine a miracle like that, confirming from heaven that this worked? Everybody gets a clean slate. Everybody gets a fresh start. Everybody gets a second chance. Everybody gets an opportunity to write a better story. Can you imagine tens of thousands of people, and you're the first person to see that cord turn white? It would spread pretty quick. It'd be a buzz. But here's the thing. No one's allowed to do anything. It's Yom Kippur. You're not allowed to do anything until Yom Kippur ends. And Yom Kippur ends with a very simple move. When the priest sees that the cord has turned white, there was a chair on the stage that everybody could see. And he would back off. He would back up to that chair, and he would simply sit. And when the priest sat down, it was the indication to the people there was nothing else left to do. Everything's been accomplished. Everybody's got a clean slate. Everybody's got an empty bucket. Everybody's got a fresh start. Everybody's got an opportunity to write a better story. And I want you to feel the emotions of this. Can you imagine having a year's worth of regret and that miracle happens, confirming it all worked? What would the general feeling in the room be? Whoa, like... And I'm trying to think, now they haven't been allowed to do anything for an entire day, and now they can. So what they would do is they would go nuts. They're blowing horns, they're jumping, they're shouting, they're screaming, they're worshiping. They are absolutely letting it all out. And this is an important thing. It wasn't celebration in order to get God to act, because our lack of faithfulness does never compromise God's faithfulness. It was a celebration of what he already did. It's when you get a revelation that you actually get a second chance to sow new seeds, that thing rises up inside of you and it has to come out. This is an account of a guy that went to a Yom Kippur ceremony, and he wrote down his experience. It's this kind of old English translation, but you'll get the point. Next slide. He then fastened a scarlet woolen thread to the head of the goat for Azazel. And laying his hands upon it again, he recited the following confession of sin and prayer for forgiveness. O Lord, I've acted with iniquities, trespasses, it says before you. I, my household, and the sons of Aaron, your holy ones. O Lord, forgive the iniquities, transgressions, and sins that I, my household, and Aaron's children, your holy people, committed before you. As it is written in the law of Moses, your servant, for on this day he will forgive you to cleanse you from all your sins before the Lord, and you will be clean. This is Yom Kippur. It happened yesterday. And I thought, what a better place and a better time to allow faith to rise up in us. The thing that nobody at Emerge Church would ever want happening is us falling into a cycle of despair because we can't let it go for ourselves. We can't own and surrender and believe that God would actually give us a fresh start. Or we don't want people falling into a cycle of despair because we can't let it go for someone else. It is so important to have a regular ritual by which you let it all go. For me, it's every Saturday night. Every Saturday night before I go to bed, I take a second and I'm honest with the Lord about where I failed that week. And I feel that weight lift. I surrender it to the Lord and I get a fresh start for next week. I also am honest about where someone hurt me that week, and I let it go for them. To have a regular ritual where we let it go for ourselves and let it go for them. Because here's the beauty of Yom Kippur, right? It's all and for everybody. If the goat's being removed for you, it's being removed for them. But Shane, they're wrong about God. I know. So is everybody. The smartest person in this room hasn't scratched 1/1000th of 1% of who God is. We got an eternity of exploration. If God forgives your shortcomings, he forgives theirs. You can't want mercy for yourself and then justice for everybody else. It just doesn't work. By the way, on this day, the required reading in the afternoon synagogue session is Jonah. They have to study the book of Jonah every Yom Kippur afternoon. Why? Because Jonah is a story of someone who received infinite mercy for himself and he didn't get it. He wanted God to hurt somebody else. You can't want mercy for yourself and judgment for everybody else. It just doesn't work. This is a day where we celebrate fresh starts, clean slates, second chances, and the opportunity to write a better story for them and you. But wait a minute. I want to test your knowledge of the Easter story for a second. So Easter's great, right? If you're not familiar, like if you're new to faith, Easter's a very important part of the Christian tradition because it's a week where we celebrate our basic faith journey, that everybody at some point will have suffering, pain, death, and grief, and it definitely gets a word, but it doesn't get the last word. Easter is that moment where we realize, yes, death, suffering, pain, grief gets a word, but the last word is resurrection. It's surprise, it's hope, it's awe, it's wonder, it's amazement, it's these sorts of things. And pastors love Easter, except for Easter and Christmas gets pretty challenging because you only have one story. And if you pastor a church for 25 years and everybody expects you to come up with something new every Easter and Christmas, that gets harrowing, actually. And so it's why I'm fully booked on those weeks forever. The pastor's like, please come take a week. So of Christmas or Easter. And so, but here's what happens. If you grew up in church, the pastors need to do something to take the pressure off of, so they do Easter plays, passion plays. And normally they're okay, but really it's just, we can't think of nothing else to say, right? And so you do this. Everybody's seen a passion play. Everybody's seen the Passion of the Christ, Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ. We all did once. No one saw it twice. If you saw it twice, what's wrong with you? It's hardly Friday night Netflix relaxation viewing, watching someone be beat to death. But here's the thing, right? In every passion play ever, and in the movies, the same thing happens. Pilate doesn't want to hurt Jesus, but he doesn't want a riot because that would upset Caesar. So he finally acquiesces and he says, I'll leave it up to you. What do you want me to do with him? And they chant something very famous. Everybody together, crucify him, crucify him, crucify him. Here's the problem. That's not what they said. Here's John 19, next slide. It was the day of preparation of Passover week, about the sixth hour. Here's your king, Pilate said to the Jews. But they shouted, take him away, take him away. Crucify him. Hold on. If a Jewish crowd is chanting, take him away, what word are they saying? Azazel. 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 Is this the day God just lets it all go? But wait a minute. The Azazel has to be put in charge of somebody. Remember Jesus said, you've been given charge over me? And it says in Leviticus that whoever's in charge of the Azazel, when he's done, he has to wash his hands. Next slide, this is Matthew. When Pilate saw that he was getting nowhere, but instead an uproar was starting, he took water and he washed his hands in front of the crowd. Is this the day God just lets it all go? Oh, but wait a minute. Yom Kippur ends when a priest sits. This is Hebrews chapter 10. Day after day, every priest stands. If you have a standing priest, you have more work to do. Every priest stands and offers his religious duties. Again and again, he offers the same sacrifices, which could never take away sins. But when this priest has offered for all time one sacrifice for sins, he is now sat down at the right hand of God. Which leads me to this question. Have we ever presented the gospel in such a way that makes Jesus stand back up? Like, Jesus, I know you handled everything, and our lack of faithfulness doesn't compromise your faithfulness, but we just need you to stand back up because we need everybody to do our ritual at our moment, at our time, at our altar. It makes us feel better. Now, the good news is better than that. The good news is our priest is sitting. You just step into it and trust it. Surrender to it. It's belief and faith and trust. There's this, There's this one, this guy named John. He wrote this observation about Yom Kippur. It is so brilliant. He was one of Jesus' disciples. This is in 1 John. He says, next slide. He says, dear children. I love that. Dear children. Next slide. Sorry. Go on. Dear children. Dear children. I write this to you so that you will not sin. Stop. The only appropriate response to the grace of God is to choose to live better. Like, this is obvious. If you commit a crime and a clever lawyer gets you off, stop breaking the law. If you hit a bad shot and your golf partner says, take another one, aim different. If you fail a test and the teacher takes compassion on you and says, that wasn't your best, I'm going to give you a do-over. Write different answers. If you've been acting like an idiot and someone advocates for you and gives you another chance, act differently. The only appropriate response to the grace of God is to sow new seeds and change our lives, right? You don't want to show up every year with the same exact bucket of regret. That would be awful. Will God forgive you? Yes, every time. Yes, but your life's quality will suffer horribly. There's so much a better life. Dear children, I write this to you so that you will not sin. But if anybody does sin, I love that. Dear children, I hope you don't. But if you do, and you will, we have one who speaks to the Father in our defense, Jesus Christ, the righteous one. He is the atoning sacrifice. That's a Yom Kippur word. He's the atoning sacrifice for our sins. Oh, and not just for ours, but the sins of the whole world. This entire grace has been extended to everybody, everywhere, not to just one little group of people in one corner of the world. Dear children, I hope you don't, but if you do. Now, they say great teachers can summarize big things in one sentence. I need four. If I could have my band back up here, please. Next slide. How can we remember tonight? Let's think about it this way. The hands have been washed. But Shane, I committed a crime. I know you paid the price. Prison likely was uncomfortable. And I'm so sorry you went through that. But now you can have a fresh start, a clean slate, an opportunity to write a better story. You can sow new seeds. And the good news is better than that failure. The good news is that the hands have been washed. Maybe we could say it this way. Next slide. The cord has turned white. Yeah, but Shane, it was this addiction. I just can't. Yeah, I know. Dear children, I wish you would stop and not experience all that pain. But your lack of faithfulness never compromised God's faithfulness. And the good news is better than that failure. The one thing we don't want holding you back is a fear that God is still holding things against you. The good news is the cord has turned white. Or maybe we could say it this way. Next slide. The priest has sat down. And in case you're wondering, I do know how to count. I don't know why that's 1, 3, and 5, but I know someone's going to notice and tell me. I'm looking at it right now going, I definitely know how to count. But the priest sat down for that failure too. You say, Shane, I went through a divorce. I know, dear children. I hate that you went through that. That must have been awful and painful. But what we don't want is you living in despair for the rest of your life. You could sow new seeds and have a different outcome. And the good news is better than that. It's the priest has sat down. But maybe the best way we can remember tonight is simply this. Next slide. The goat has left the building. Azazelvis has left the building. You say, Shane, you understand. The divorce was my fault. I know the story. And you, quite frankly, were awful. Absolutely. You were awful. It was your fault. But the good news is better than that failure. The good news is your goat has left, and no one here is going to be bringing it back up. You can now sow new seeds and change your life. This is a day of fresh starts, second chances, clean slates, and the opportunity to write a better story. But Shane, I've stuffed my whole life up. I know. I wish you weren't going through that pain. But the good news is better than that failure. The good news is your goat has left too, their goat has left too, and we all have an opportunity to write a better story. Now, I thought about how to end tonight. There's two ways to do it, and neither one are wrong. The first way is, if you've got regrets that you want to leave at the foot of Jesus Christ, and you want to come up here, leave it up here, and leave debt free, knowing on the inside you've been set free. If you want to come up here and do that, we're going to pray for you, and I want you to get up here in 3, 2, 1. There's nothing wrong with that. We're not doing that. Just because I just don't want to deal with all the snot that brings. It's just, I'm so sorry, God. And it violates the spirit of the day. The spirit of Yom Kippur is celebration, not pain. And so here's the thing, right? Here's what you can't do. You can't tell a room with white people in it to go nuts. They don't even know what that means. You tell a room, we're gonna go nuts now, and there's white people, we do not know what to do. We're like, hey. White people even dance with their shoulders. They're like, what? And it looks awful and awkward and terrible. So I picked the thing that everybody, regardless of culture, can do comfortably without feeling awkward. And that is clapping on beat. Now, there's a way. When hands come together, there's a way you could do it mindlessly, like, right? But that's not what I want. In the ancient world, when hands came together, it was corporate agreement. It's like we all agree together to let it go for you and me. We're celebrating the faithfulness of God, and our lack of faith doesn't compromise that. And there's this agreement. I want you to pay attention. Actually, this is the altar call. Now, if you just stand up, you've been sitting long enough, just stand up. And I want you to pay attention to what's gonna happen in your spirit. What's gonna happen is when we start this in a second, hands are gonna come together. If I make a handshake agreement or a high five, it just means we agree. And when hands come together and there's this noise that's gonna rise from us, faith is gonna arise in this place. And the shame, the pain, the guilt, the agony, the crime, the addiction, the divorce, you're not gonna have to carry that one more day, because the good news is better than that failure. The good news is your goat has left the building. So, I said goodbye yesterday, is that right? So my friend on the drums, can you give me that beat to that song we talked about? All right, here we go, like this. You, my brothers and sisters of Emerge, the pain, the shame, the guilt, the agony, the divorce, the crime, the addiction, you're not going to have to carry it one more day, because the good news is that the corner's turned white, the hands have been washed, the priest has most definitely sat down, and more than anything at all, may each and every one of you leave with a revelation deep in your soul that your goat has left the building. Grace and peace.
Jesus, the world behind the cross before, and I won't turn back. I have decided to follow Jesus, the world behind the cross before, and I won't turn back. And I won't turn back. And I won't turn back. The world behind the cross. praise the Lord.